on digital radio, on the app, on your smart TV, on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch.tv, and Facebook.
The Sportscast. Expect the unexpected.
The update presented by The Sportscast.
The Sportscast, June 10th, 2024. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, X, and Apple Podcast. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcast or Spotify, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. We're also on online radio. Visit our website, thesportscast.net. Also on X, you can follow us on X and Instagram at thesportscast1. And check out our app, The Sportscast for iOS. U.S. men's national team gets pummeled by Colombia, and the Celtics are up 2-0 in the NBA Finals. And join us all the way from the Northeast, Hal Phillips. Welcome back to The Sportscast.
Thanks, Santi. Always a pleasure.
Hal, what a weekend in sports. I had to start with the U.S. team first, getting scored on 5-1 in a international friendly, one goal by Tim Weah and the other goals by John Arias, Rafael Borre, Rios, Carrascal, and Santaterra, who has played for Aston Villa. But this was a poor performance. The U.S. soccer world is getting they're panicking right now, but Hal is not panicking. He's not hit the red button. No. Hal, I want to hear your recap from this past weekend.
Well, I watched the game, and it was a 3-1 game that we were on the short end of, and that's the way it should have ended and probably would have ended if Berhalter hadn't emptied his bench. What you had was a U.S. team that really was determined to play the ball on the ground out of the back. And during, the phase of the game, the first 60, 70 minutes when both teams were playing their best 11s, and this was a best 11 choice from Berhalter and his counterpart. That was the A team from Colombia, and that's a very good team that hasn't lost in, 21 matches. Very, very good side. But look, we had trouble playing the ball out of the back against their pressure all night. We battled. We were successful in doing it. Many times, not every time, we gave the ball away a little too cheaply in midfield. But this was a 2-1 game for, a hunk of the second half and in the balance. Then they scored to make it 3-1, and then the coaches sent in some people for, experience purposes. And once that happened, almost immediately, those subs were terrible. Poor Cameron Carter-Vickers, who I like because he's a former Tottenham product, nearly gave a goal away immediately upon coming on, and then was at fault on one of the goals that was scored. And they kept trying to play the ball out of the back with A, players who weren't their first choices to play in this game, and B, pretty cold. They came right off the bench, and boom, you're against a team that's pressing you full field, and look, they crumbled. They gave up two late goals that were bad, and I can't go into the details of them. I was shaking my head and quite annoyed when it went down. But was this a 5-1 game? Sure. That's the goals all count. Was it closer than that? Yes. It was a pretty competitive 3-1 match between a good side, the U.S., and a very good side, Colombia. So it was interesting. I watched with my friend Tom, and we were, at 3-1, we're like, well, this is not the most hopeful performance. We could be a lot better, but it was better than Mexico versus Uruguay. Mexico got killed by Uruguay 4-0 earlier in the week. In the end, they probably looked just as bad, but if it were me, I'd rather be the U.S.
Yeah, it's something that I was surprised how myself when I'm watching the match, when Tim Weah scored that goal 2-1, there was some hope there in the 58th minute, but then they kept scoring 3 goals after that. This is just a friendly, how,
yeah.
Everyone's saying all our starters played in Europe. I was looking more into the details. Matt Turner hasn't played since like the wintertime for Nottingham Forest. And then you can say the same for Gio Reyna. Hasn't really played much. Maybe ups in a little bit. Tim Ream hasn't played for a couple months as well. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts like with this roster that some of them have not been playing well?
Well, that's true. I don't know that Matt Turner made any mistakes that are going to cost anybody a game. The people who did were people like Anthony Robinson, who's been playing every minute of every game for Fulham. He was not good in this game. He gave a ball away directly that led to one of the first two goals. And the other goal was a direct mistake by Tim Ream, who played all season at Fulham, didn't start for a lot of those seasons. I think it's fair to put him in that bucket that you just described. He hasn't played as much. I was surprised to see him, frankly. I don't know what we get out of trying. We know what Tim Ream can do, but he's also 37 years old and just looked slow and made an error that had nothing to do with being 37. He just gave the ball away and they made us pay. The reality was, and you watched the game, the States made two or three mistakes in the first, 60 minutes of this game. And two of them ended up being goals. And one of them could have been a goal. It came off the post. But the flip side of that is that we had chances to score. We had eight or nine chances on goal. Three or four of them were very good chances. Some of them missed, some of them were saved. But look, we were dangerous enough, I thought. But was Reyna good? No, he wasn't. Was Pulisic good? No, he wasn't.
He had one chance.
Sorry?
He only had like one chance at goal.
Yeah.
At the first half.
He was very quiet. He came off at halftime. There's a guy who's played all year at AC Milan and looked it. So, pick your poison. It's the first game, preparing for a big tournament. And I'm not saying that Berhalter did himself any favors with this performance. He did not. But I'm not going to press the panic button. England lost to Iceland over the weekend. France drew 0-0 with Canada. Greece, I think Germany scrapped, to a one goal win against Greece. And in a game I did watch, Croatia went into Portugal and beat them soundly. Now, Croatia is a really good team, but that's not the way Portugal wanted to go to the Euros either. So these are friendlies. Things happen. You're trying, guys. And Berhalter did the right thing trying to get people into the game and get them some seasoning and actual playing time before the tournament starts. But what I wouldn't have asked Carter Cameron Vickers to do was try to play the ball out and testing his nerve after coming on the field at the 70th minute in a game they were down 3-1. Get rid of it. I realize you're trying to have people play the way you want them to play, and it's every national team is a work in progress. You want them to play the ball out of the back. They have shown this ability to do it as a unit, this year for the last 2 years, and including at the World Cup in Qatar. But this was not a great performance. But I think most of it is traced back to this insistence on playing the ball on the ground, out of the back, and them just not having the nerve or the technical ability to pull it off.
Yeah, the U.S. had 52% ball possession, total shots on target. We only had two. Mm-hmm. Colombia had six, and five of them were goals. block shots, both three. So it was kind of even when it comes to the stats, except the shots on targets and the goal. So
yeah, I think if you want to be negative about it, and I can play that game. I thought that Johnny Cardoso playing in the defensive midfield position, really had an opportunity to make a name for himself, and he didn't play great. But he was not alone throughout the midfield. McKennie and he were not able to turn the ball up and take the ball with their back to play, turn it, and make a distributive pass. And when they did, they always went left. Left, left, left. And I was watching Cardoso very closely because, I'm really interested in him.
He's
as a
really
player.
Good. I like him. Yeah,
he is good. And he, if that guy is a player, maybe we can stick him in at central, at a center back position, enabling he and Tyler Adams to play on the field at the same time. Because right now they're sharing a position, which is, you know, not ideal. But he was not looking. He was not giving a 180 look to the field when he did get the ball and was able to pick up his head. He was, number one, very nervous about picking up his head, as everyone was. They just gave the ball away too often and were picked clean too often. But when he did look up, it was always looking left at Pulisic's side. And, you know, when they finally switched the field up in the second half, one time, boom, they scored from the right. And then after that, they would not go back to the right side. I'm not sure why that was, but they were really left-centric. Maybe that was the game plan. But mostly the issue was they couldn't hold the ball in midfield. They kept giving it away. And it was, you know, loose play and tentative, anxious play. And that's never a good sign, but it's not unusual for the first game in a friendly, especially the first friendly, you know, before a tournament. These guys haven't played together in a long time. And some guys were tired. Some guys were out. I'm not going to push the panic button yet. Unfortunately, we have Brazil on Wednesday, and that doesn't stand to be much better.
Exactly. And here is what Greg Balter said after the match.
They're on the field as a former center back watching the defensive play that there was. Just what almost sort of instinctively is going through your mind when you're watching that?
You know, we can't pinpoint the center backs in this one. We really can't. You know, it had nothing to do with a 5-1 result. You know, when you know, you can go back and check the goals. You know, it's midfielders not recovering. It's guys losing the ball in positions when our fullbacks are high. You know, they got hung out to dry a number of occasions. You know, it's a second phase from a set piece. It's a miscue on a ball that's going out of bounds in the first 6 minutes of the game. So, you know, it's a collective thing. And you know, the reason why I'm so disappointed is because guys just didn't do their job. It's about your role, your responsibility, and we didn't do that.
How he just said what you said a couple minutes ago, and he also said the players did not do their job. Your thoughts on his comments, Greg Berhalter?
Well, I don't think he's wrong. He reminds me that, you know, that was a ridiculous goal to give up after 6 minutes on basically just a whiff. And then they gave up a goal on Anthony Robinson's, you know, who didn't play well. The goal that was directly attributed to him, it wasn't even a bad play. A ball was played through. He made a nice sliding tackle when he didn't really need to. If he had just let it run, there was nobody behind him. He didn't know that. So he makes a nice sliding tackle, wins the ball, but it drops right to the feet of a Colombian, and boom, second goal. So they were unlucky. And, you know, he's right. When you are playing out of the back like that, and you have two center backs playing right next to each other, they're the ones with the ball at their feet all the time. But they're not necessarily the ones who are, you know, making plays. The plays happen in front of them, often off camera, where midfielders are coming back and crossing over and trying to lose their defenders and find space so that those center backs have people to play to. So he's right. And there were a lot of errors that happened in front of those two center backs. So I feel bad for them. But they did not look comfortable. And you can say they didn't look comfortable because they didn't have easy passes in front of them. That's fair. But I don't want to get too much in the weeds here. But when you're playing two center backs next to each other and they're your primary distribution points, and someone like Gio comes back, or someone like Johnny Cardoso comes back and takes a ball, you know, with his back to the opposing goal, and he plays it straight back to Cameron Carter-Vickers. Cameron Carter-Vickers is obliged to play that ball quickly, laterally. Why? Because Cardoso has drawn a player out by coming back to play him. He's made himself available, but he's also brought a defender with him. You've got to play in behind to that space, or someone has to take that space and then open up space on the wing, and you have to play the ball quickly. All too often, Vickers and Chris Richards saw that, were afraid to make that pass, and then played it back and forth between themselves again, which allowed Colombia to recover. So there's a rhyme to this, you know, to this reason, and they can't get away from that. They did not play a great game in front of Matt Turner, and the midfielders did not play a great game in front of the back four.
What'd you think about the hand base at the stadium? I did not see much of our supporters. It was mostly Colombia.
It looked, well, the yellow really stands out, Sanji. You don't have to tell you that. Hey, look, it's the Mexican effect, and the U.S. is if they're not used to this by now, they should be. And you know, when Colombia shows up and plays that game, every Colombian on the Eastern Seaboard is going to show up, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's a big event.
In a big location like D.C., it's just the inevitable. It's like playing Costa Rica in New York City.
Yeah, and I have no. You can't really say, oh, they made more sound than the U.S. fans. You know, you have to be in the stadium to make that right. Reckoning. What we hear on TV is what TNT chooses to amplify for us or not. I'm not bothered by that, and I'm sure that when the games start, we're going to have good support. But we shall see. And I'm disappointed. It was certainly not a good performance, but. I'm not ready to throw in the towel on the team or Berhalter quite yet. I still think we're going to end up having to play Uruguay for basically all the marbles late in the group stage.
Which they have Bolivia and Panama in that group.
Yeah.
So Wednesday we play Brazil, and they're going to play their A team. They played their B team against Mexico, and they beat them 3-2. So we're going to see Vinny. We're going to see maybe Endrick. Rodrigo, all the stars. Mm-hmm. And what do you want to see how in this match? Should we have a good result, 1-1, hopefully not a blowout, but what do you want to see before the game, before the Copa America begins?
I want to see whether Berhalter sticks with this plan to play the ball out of the back. And if he does, I just want to see us trade punches. If you're going to play a good team and you're going to open it up a little bit and try to score goals, which you might as well try to do, in a friendly again ahead of a big tournament, you're going to give up chances. I just didn't feel like Richards was comfortable on the ball, and Tim Ream might have been comfortable, but looked terrible, looked old and slow. So now I'm wondering, you know, who is going to play in the middle of that defense? I'd have to check the roster, but Miles Robinson I don't think is in this team, and if he is, then is he really the possession and the distributive force that you need in that position? But again, Berhalter is right. You know, all we see are the two center backs standing and looking upfield, looking for someone to open up and create some space. And they're not getting that. So I don't know. Colombia completely neutralized. They played very, very high. We tried to press them high, couldn't do it. And, there we are. If I was Brazil, I would do the same exact thing to the U.S. until they show that they can beat it. And that will be the challenge on Wednesday, is to hold your nerve through midfield and possess the ball and turn it upfield. You know, they did that very well against good teams at the World Cup of Qatar. We haven't seen them tested by teams this good since that time. So if I was worried about one thing, it would be that.
Yes, and Robinson is in the bench, so maybe use him versus Brazil.
Perhaps. You might as well give them a some run. I mean,
right.
The thing is, Tim Ream is, you know, is the best distributor we've got from that position. But he looked very slow and old in that game, and he made some.
His age was showing.
Yeah, well, he made some technical errors that you just would never expect him to make that have nothing to do with his age. He was just poor. But what's the point of giving him another shot? I mean, if you throw Robinson in there with Richards, I think you've got a more athletic, back four, but are they gifted enough technically to be able to play the ball out of the back? I don't know. Maybe Berhalter tries, something else and doesn't go for this, you know, that this is the new sort of formation for teams that want to play the ball on the ground. At a goal kick, the goalie stands between the two center backs and he plays it to one or the other, and they work it out from there. That's what the U.S. tried to do. That's what a lot of teams that want to possess the ball do, and some pull it off and some don't. But I guess the other thing that really stood out to me was when Richards and Vickers and Ream were standing there next to each other, passing the ball back and forth. Anthony Robinson and Joe Scally were completely cut off. there was absolutely no play to them. And if they got the ball up the field to Cardoso or McKinney, that was usually the prompt for those wing backs to push up and give that central midfielder a play out to the wing. That was just not there. And whether Columbia took that away on purpose, I don't know, but it was not there. And if it's not there, then you got to find something else you want to try and go up and over the top. And when you do have possession on one of those wings, switch the field, because they're obviously flooding that zone, taking away all these passes. None of that happened. When they did switch the field against Columbia, they were technically deficient. They hit some balls over people's heads. They hit some balls too close to the defender. They had a chance to switch the field against these guys, and they couldn't do it. So bad outing. Hopefully they'll play better against Brazil and go into the tournament with a little more good feeling.
Yeah, it's something we got to look at. Colombia contenders for Copa America, what you saw?
Hell yeah.
I think so too.
Why wouldn't they? They haven't lost in 21 games. They beat Brazil during World Cup qualifying in November. They're a very good team. And you can see why they are. They're loaded. And all these guys play, you know, in Europe, and a lot of guys play in the Brazilian, you know, Serie A.
I noticed that. Yeah.
Yes. Isn't that interesting? So
that makes perfect sense. What's happening Saturday?
Yes.
Another team that is undefeated, not 21, but 9 games. The Boston Celtics went up 2-0 against the Mavericks. Drew Holiday, Hal, had 26 points, 11 rebounds. White sprinted down the court to swat away the Mavericks' last chance to make it a one-possession game yesterday. They beat the Mavericks 105-98 to take a 2-0 series lead. Your Celtics have an 86% chance of winning the championship.
I'd like to be the guy whose job it is to come up with these percentages. They never, if you notice that they never surprise you.
Never surprise me.
A team takes a 2-0 lead. Oh, the
86%. I'm sure Mark Cuban loves to hear those stats. Right?
Well, they just don't mean anything. I could come up with them and be as accurate as anyone else. No, the Celtics aren't in a great spot. They didn't even play particularly well in this game. They played well defensively throughout. That's actually what this team's forte is. They went through a terrible shooting slump. The three-pointers they never made consistently in this game, and their best player was, I think, 6 for 22 from the floor. And but the great thing about Tatum is that he did everything else. He rebounded. He played great defense, and he battled. And if I can point to one thing that sort of sets all my anxieties to the side, anxieties that I expressed to you and everyone on the podcast audience, that is not happening here, is that they are trying to get to the basket. Jason Tatum couldn't make a shot. And, you know, it's pretty universally held that when you're not making your jumper, go to the basket, get fouled, go to the line, scratch out points however you can. They're doing that. But Jrue Holiday has been the difference. He's been the best player on the floor in both of these games. And he says, well, I want to take Kyrie, shuts him down. I want to take Luka. He does the best job of anyone doing it. And he's invaluable. He's the difference between this year's team and last year's teams. Porzingis was incredible in game one. He was the difference in that game, which honestly wasn't that close. This game was all about Jrue. I think he was 11 for 14 from the field and playing suffocating defense. The more you watch the Mavs, the more they are a two-man team. And PJ Washington and Derek Jones are just not very good. They're not very versatile players. And the Twin Towers have done nothing against the Celtics. They were so dominant against Minnesota. And Minnesota was so big. You know, they had 3 7-footers that they played all the time. And yet the Mavs never looked small, and they were those big guys were never exposed as being you know, underskilled physical centers. They look very rudimentary against the Celtics. They look frustrated, and they don't look like they're ready to score unless it's a dunk, and they're not getting very many dunks. And I think that's thanks to Mr. Porzingis. So far, a pretty awesome performance from the Celtics.
Celtics are up 2-0. Game 3 goes on Wednesday. in Dallas. Jason Tatum had 18 points. That's it. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely a Drew Holiday game. Luka, who was questionable before the game with ankle, knee, shoulder bruises, things like that, was trying to carry the team. He only scored 3 points in the fourth quarter. And like you were saying, Kyrie was shut down. But what can the Mavs do to come back in this series? Because it's not looking good.
I thought in the first half that Doncic had come to the realization that in order for his team to win, he was going to have to score 50 points. And he was on pace to do that. He was amazing. He always looks like he's sort of creakily, you know, doddering around the court when he's not, you know, got the ball in his hands. He looks like he's hurt. And I have no doubt that he is hurt. I don't know what they were trying to do with that. Oh, he's now questionable thing. I'd maybe give the trying to engender a false sense of security on the Celtics side. I can't believe that anyone thought that would work. But Doncic has done what he has to do. He's scored 30-plus points in these games. He may have to go 40. But, you know, wow. Kyrie has not been the player that he was earlier in the playoffs. He was not great, honestly, in Minnesota in terms of scoring, but he did everything else. In this series, he's been sort of bad. But, you know, is he bad or are the Celtics equipped, as we've discussed, with three absolutely plus-plus defenders in the backcourt? So as good as Denver's backcourt is, those two guys, we have three guys who can guard either one of them. So that's a lot of flexibility. And I thought both of them, Kyrie and Luka, looked really tired after halftime. But to be fair, I thought both teams looked really tired after halftime. They missed a ton of shots, and it was what we call a rock fight. It was just miss after miss after miss. But you know what teams benefit from rock fights are defensive-oriented teams. And the Celtics are the best defensive unit in the league, as far as I can tell, and have been all season long. As bad as they have shot the ball on occasion, they never stopped doing that. And that may win them an NBA title.
Celtics are looking good. I'm just saying that. I'm not saying they're going to win it, but they're looking good right now. Predictions, Hal, game three in Dallas, Celtics at the Mavericks. Who do you got?
I sort of think the Mavericks will win because I sort of think they have to win. If they can't win this game, it is over. Seems and I think that if they don't win that game, you may see Luka sit out game four because I think he's a mess and he will give it his go. He's such an interesting player. He's such a whiner. He really just can't keep his mouth
shut. He whines to the refs a lot, doesn't he?
Goes to the refs after every single dead ball situation to say something. And then they sort of listen to him and then he smiles at them like, hey, all is forgiven. I'm your buddy. But it's a weird smile. It's the same smile that he sort of, you know, gives his own teammates after he's ripped them a new one. It's the smile he gives somebody after he's cussed them out and told them that they can't guard him and then wants to help them up off the floor. He's a very complicated human, that Luka Doncic. I love watching him. He's irresistible when it comes to viewing. But, geez, I think he's starting to get it into his head that they're in a very tough spot, and he just doesn't have a lot of people he can pass to. Think of how many alley-oop dunks he passed off to three or four of those front court guys in the Minnesota series. They're not getting any of those for whatever reason. And those guys can't create their own shots. That's a problem.
You think all that complaining is a European thing? Because one of my friends was telling me that. So, is that a European thing? They complain a lot to the refs? Because we see it a lot in football. But
I don't think so. I think he's a certain type of player, and that type of player exists in soccer, and that kind of player exists, exists in basketball. Dirk Nowitzki never worked the refs. Peja Stojakovic never worked the refs. I mean, Porzingis doesn't say anything. I mean, the NBA is absolutely full of Euros, and nobody bitches and moans like this guy, and it is nonstop. And you know, ultimately, that can't help you. Ultimately, the refs are human. And they're going to, if they have a chance to stick it to this guy who's been publicly lambasting them, you know, for the entirety of his career, they're more, you know, they're more apt to do that than not. I'm not saying they've tried to screw him, but geez, it can't help you to it just can't.
The other game to predict, USA versus Brazil in Orlando. Who do you got, Hal?
Oh, geez. Well, I'm not picking against the Brazilians. I just hope we play better. 4-2 Brazil.
4-2 Brazil. Wow.
Yeah.
That's still
I think they're going to open it up. I think they've got to try and, you know, there's no point in trying to pack it in against Brazil. I mean, what's the point of that exercise? You may as well try to excel and do what you need to do in the midfield against a good team. You're going to play a good team in the group stage. You're going to play a very good team. And then or after, you're going to play only good teams. Why, you know, parking the bus? Do you practice parking the bus in a real game situation? I don't think so.
And in Orlando will be another home game for Brazil or the road team. Question of the day, Hal, what is your favorite herb or spice?
My favorite herb or spice?
Right.
Oh, cumin.
Cumin. Nice.
Easy.
We had the poll on our Twitter. It is the herb that's winning is garlic. So that is the leading herb winning. So there you have it. Okay. A lot going on. NBA, Copa America beginning. The Euros begin this week. So looking forward to it. So Hal and I will be here all throughout these next month. And we'll be looking at what's going to happen in Europe and South America. There's a lot of soccer. Hal, what is the best way to reach you online to ask you, hey, did you watch the Bruce Arena interview last week?
I did not watch the Bruce Arena. I read portions of it, and I guess it was interesting to hear.
He made noise.
Sorry?
He made some noise.
Well, the context of the story I read was all about Clint Dempsey and how he didn't feel like Bruce Arena played him enough when he was young, and Bruce apologized, and it was weird. I don't know. It didn't seem like news to me, but it was I guess it was interesting. I don't care about what Clint Dempsey thought about it in 2004. Do you?
I do not. I guess he was getting out of college or something.
I think Bruce Arena is an interesting character, but he's also trying to get himself a job. So he's been a little bit more high profile in media of late, and I'm sure we'll see more of them with such a busy summer of football coming at us. But there's certainly be plenty to pot about.
There you have it. And your contact information to reach you?
Oh, sorry. I'm right there. GenZero.HalPhillips.net. That is my my book's website, Generation Zero. And that's also my handle on Threads and Instagram.
And Hal's working on a new book.
Yes, indeed. An examination of the U.S.-Mexico rivalry, which will be published in January 2026 by Bloomsbury, because they just acquired my publisher, Roman and Littlefield. So I like that. Bloomsbury. It's very classy.
There you have it. USA, Mexico. Interesting times right now. Both teams are Mexico's struggling. We're not struggling. We just struggled one match so far.
Yeah, but now we have to play Brazil, and everyone struggles against them. We'll see.
We'll see. You can reach us at thesportscast.net or thesportscast1 on X and Instagram. We'll be tweeting throughout the week and looking forward to soccer. Euros begin at the end of the week. And, man, it's going to be a roller coaster. Well, anyways, Hal, I appreciate you coming on to the Sportscast.
Always my pleasure, Santi.
And this was your update.